Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. For a pregnant woman and expectant father at her side, it is hard news to take on board. A prenatal test has come back positive for Down syndrome. How a doctor delivers that news will influence a profound decision to continue with the pregnancy or not. That's what Brian Scottko finds in a recently published study. Scottko is a 26-year-old Harvard medical student who polled mothers of children with Down syndrome. He found that in retrospect, mothers felt they weren't given the most current information about the genetic condition by their doctors, including the positive potential of a life with Down syndrome. About 5,000 Down syndrome babies are born every year in the United States. An estimated 80% of Down syndrome pregnancies are terminated. With prenatal screening expanding across an ever broader range of genetic conditions, screening and Down syndrome are inching toward the abortion debate. This hour on Point, the Down syndrome diagnosis, the prenatal advice of doctors, the prenatal decisions of couples, and the growing political and technological complexity of all prenatal discussions. You can join the conversation. What would you do? What did you do? Is there a right or wrong decision here? And did a doctor's words influence yours? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is Brian Scottko. He is in his final year of a joint degree program at Harvard Medical School and Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government. His 25-year-old sister, Kristen, has Down syndrome. His study was published earlier this year in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology. Brian Scottko, thanks for being with us.
Tom, thanks so much for having me.
Tell us first about your study. What did you ask? Who did you ask it of? And what did you learn?
Well, Tom, I asked mothers who have children with Down syndrome a simple question. How did you receive the diagnosis? What did your doctor say? And how could the medical profession be improved? We sent out 3,000 surveys to mothers across the country, and they responded in large numbers. And the mothers have said, mostly, that they did not feel they received a full portrait of Down syndrome and did not have a full understanding of the potentials and the possibilities of living with Down syndrome today.
So what kind of picture emerged of the range of advice or the way in which mothers, very often no doubt with expectant fathers at their side, got this information? How do people get it?
Well, mothers said that doctors did an excellent job in explaining the science of Down syndrome, explaining how it comes from, explaining chromosomes, and explaining some of the medical realities that come with living with Down syndrome. But where mothers feel that some doctors fell short is describing the potential, the possibilities. What is it like to live with Down syndrome today? What are the possibilities? Mothers say that while the science is good, the art of medicine still needs to be improved.
What about that life, the quality of life of people with Down syndrome? I'm reading here 350,000 in total in the United States. Our memories are of a time when Down syndrome people did not live long. Even reaching young adulthood for a long time was unusual. What's the range of functionality of Down syndrome people and the range of life today?
Well, Tom, people with Down syndrome are proving day after day that they are living fulfilling lives and are important contributors to their local communities. People with Down syndrome are holding jobs today. They are going to higher education. They are living on their own, and they're also achieving new levels of expectations that we had never imagined before. What they're proving is if we believe in them and we support them, they can do it.
We're going to talk more about that, but we also want to look at the real-world kind of ramifications of your work. We saw this spring, co-sponsored by Senator Sam Brownback, Republican of Kansas, quite a conservative U.S. Senator, and Senator Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts, this bill called the Prenatally Diagnosed Condition Awareness Act. You were there for the rollout, the announcement of the introduction of this legislation. What would it do, Brian?
That's right. Both of the senators have combined jointly to support a bill in a bipartisan demonstration that calls for more appropriations from Congress to allow mothers to get more accurate, up-to-date information and also be made available referrals to local parent support groups. So this bill really builds upon the recommendations of the mothers in the study.
But you know, this also feeds into a huge national debate over abortion. Senator Brownback, very much anti-abortion. Senator Kennedy has been a supporter, but many Democrats, like Hillary Rodham Clinton, now talking about more and more about wanting to make it rare. You yourself are described, Wall Street Journal reported about your work recently. They said, Brian Scottco, practicing Roman Catholic, personally opposes the termination of any pregnancy. And you've got the tone of an advocate, as we talk today, Brian, and I'm guessing unabashedly so. Your sister has Down syndrome. You've got a personal relationship and stake in this. How do you see your research? Is it advocacy? Is it something else?
Well, Tom, I've been lucky enough to really have Kristen as a life coach in my life, Kristen being my sister with Down syndrome. But in this case, my personal opinion needs to be set aside. I don't think it plays a role because this is a story of the mothers who responded to the survey. It is their call for a better medical system. They have now written a prescription for physicians and asked that the system be improved. And their opinions are that at no cost, more accurate, up-to-date information could be made available to them so that they can make their own personal decisions.
And a decision that you're saying through your study, if the news were delivered differently, maybe with more of a positive context and surround, might result in more Down syndrome pregnancies going through to term, more Down syndrome people among us, and by your lights living productive lives for themselves and gratifying for the people around them as well. We're going to hear in this hour from a young Down syndrome woman who is engaged to be married soon. But we want to also go straight to the kind of center of this, where you centered your research, Brian. I'm joined in the studio by Beth Allard. She is mother of Ben, 6 years old, has Down syndrome. Ben was diagnosed, of course, still in pregnancy in 1998. She's testified to Congress about being a mother with a son who has Down syndrome and her experience of being given the diagnosis, prenatal. Beth Allard, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
We should take us back to that day. Well, but first, tell us about Ben. We got to go there first. He's 6 years old. He has Down syndrome. Describe Ben for us.
Oh, he is just... the only way I can describe him is he is complete joy. He is a smart little boy who is determined, and he is funny, and he has all tons of friends, and he just lights up a room every time he comes into a room. He lights up the room. I just spoke with the assistant principal at his school. He goes to a public school in Franklin, and she said, "I'll tell you, he is a hot ticket. He just makes us all laugh, and he keeps us all on our toes, and he's actually doing everything and more of what the doctor said that he wouldn't do."
Beth, take us back to the day when you learned that this was a Down syndrome pregnancy you were in the midst of. How did it happen?
Well, of course, when you become pregnant, you're elated that you're going to be having a child.
This was your first pregnancy.
This was our first pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I was 35, so of course they want to put you through the various tests. We opted not to.
The risk increases as people age. There's a risk of miscarriage that comes with the test. Very small, but nevertheless there.
Right.
So you learned how and when.
Well, we learned, actually, we wanted to find out what the sex of the baby was, and so we opted not to have any tests other than an ultrasound. So during the ultrasound, the technician was doing all kinds of measurements and was taking a lot of time and kind of left the room abruptly. And I looked at my husband. I said, "They're going to come back and tell us there's something wrong with our baby." Mm-hmm. And sure enough, they came back and the measurements were what they had thought the child may have Down syndrome.
Physical measurements
exactly.
That indicated
the femur
that.
Was shorter, the webbed neck, those sorts of things.
Was it then presented to you as a decision needed to be made here?
Well, they had us go back to talk to my doctor, and they just, slammed down the folder and said, "This is not good news. You have a 50-50 chance of having a child with Down syndrome." Mm-hmm. And your child, and we said, "Well, what is that? We don't know anything about it." "Well, you know, the child, you don't know the level of that
functionality.
Functionality, mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And your child could be hanging off you and drooling and probably won't be able to read or write and just going to be a big challenge for you. And we won't know until you have an amniocentesis mm-hmm. to be 100% certain. So they had us have that. And at that point, they concurred that the baby had Down syndrome and that, you know, you have 2 weeks to make a decision.
You decided to go ahead.
Yes.
How? Why?
Well, we were very frightened. It's hard to describe unless you're going through it. I cried every day. I knew nothing about it. The doctors just said, you know, you have 2 weeks. You need to make the decision. If you decide to terminate the pregnancy, you're pretty much guaranteed to have a healthy child the next time. And basically did not give us any information, did not recommend any support groups, any books to read, any organizations to contact. They gave us no information.
I've read you say you felt in the end it was almost God's will to go ahead with this
yes,
pregnancy.
Yeah. Well, my husband's uncle is a priest, and something that kind of hit home with us is he said, look, you're not in charge. We're not in charge.
We'll talk more about this, but in a word, do you blame couples who make the other decision, who
not
go the other way?
Not at all. Not at all. It's a very difficult decision, but if they have the proper information and make an educated decision, I would not judge them in any way. What they have to do whatever is best for them and their family.
And of course, in this onrushing future, couples are going to know more and more about pregnancies before they come to term. Lots of decisions to be made. Beth Allard, we're very glad you're with us here for your perspective. We want you to stick with us in the studio here. And Brian Scottco in New York, please hang on. We are talking about the Down syndrome diagnosis, the prenatal advice of doctors, the prenatal decisions of couples, and the growing political and technical complexity of all prenatal decisions. What would you do? What did you decide when the doctor broke the news? Have you been through it? How did you learn? And can you imagine a more difficult decision? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Down syndrome diagnosis. You're welcome to join the conversation. What do you make of this moment when parents, in a sense, have to play God in pain? Is there a right and wrong decision here? Should politics be involved? And is our understanding of this choice evolving? In what direction? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Joined in this hour by Brian Scottco at Harvard Medical School. He came out with a study that turned a lot of heads earlier this year, looking at how mothers were advised during their pregnancy on this front. His sister Kristen has Down syndrome. I'm joined in the studio by Beth Allard, a mother of Ben, 6 years old, has Down syndrome. She got the diagnosis in 1998, and you've heard some of her story already in this hour. We are joined right now from Doldsville, New York, by Carrie Bergeron. She is 29 years old, recently engaged to Sindor Desai. She has Down syndrome. Carrie, we're very happy to have you with us. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
We're terrific. Carrie, I wish you'd tell us, first of all, about your engagement. When's the wedding?
It's next year. It's in July 1st and 8th. Because we're having two weddings.
Wow.
Suji, who is my fiancé, he is a Hindu, so we're going to have a Hindu wedding plus a Christian wedding the week after.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Sujit, if I have it right, Mr. Desai also has Down syndrome. How did you meet Carrie?
We actually met at a conference called the National Down Syndrome Congress. It was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania at that time. And I was actually doing some kind of speech, and he just knew that he wanted to get together with me and everything. And then we really actually became really good friends like last year, and we dated for 6 months, and then we got engaged on April 10, 2005.
Wow. Congratulations. Carrie, you're a very high-functioning person with Down syndrome. I mean, there's a lot that you've done. Not everyone with Down syndrome would be able to do it. You're even a motivational speaker, and we can hear that you're probably pretty good at that. Mr. Desai, your fiancé is a musician. Tell us about your life. I mean, apart from your love life, which sounds like a lucky thing to have happened, what do you focus on in life? What do you spend your time with?
Well, actually, I have been working at my local school as a aide in a pre-K program. I work with children with and without special needs. I also work for our family business, Bertrand Healthcare, and it is linked to my website, which has my special tomato story, and that is the brand name for all the equipment that we make. We make equipment for people with physical disabilities over the internet,
mm-hmm.
and I work in the office.
Carrie,
above all, I also go around and do speeches.
Yeah, and I can hear that you're no doubt very good at that. One of the things that you told a conference that you spoke to recently, the Wall Street Journal was reporting on this, is that loneliness can be an issue for you and other people with Down syndrome. Why exactly, Carrie?
Well, like, when I was a teenager, when I was in high school, I wasn't able to do many things that my other friends did, like having a boyfriend and a girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
Having jobs, being participated in school sports and all that, and I wasn't able to do that. And so really I wasn't really with my friends out of school. Everybody was very nice to me in school, but they never really involved me with anything.
So it was hard. Carrie, I know we just have you for another minute. You know that a lot of parents get the diagnosis of Down syndrome during pregnancy, and they have an enormous decision to make. Do you have any advice to parents in that situation?
Well, I would have to say that, well, every person with Down syndrome or any other special needs, they have the opportunity to do things they want to do, but it has to be in their own potential, like their own special way,
mm-hmm.
Type of thing. I myself advocate for those of us with special needs to get out there and spread the awareness for Down syndrome and other special needs, but in their own way.
Carrie, we hear that loud and clear. We wish you a wonderful wedding when it comes, and a long and happy life with your fiancé, Mr. Desai. And we're very grateful to you for being with us in this hour. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Carrie Bergeron, joining us there from Dolgeville, New York, 29 years old, Down syndrome. Brian Scottko, where in the range of Down syndrome functionality do you place Carrie? She's clearly a lovely young woman with a wedding and hopes for a big life ahead of her. Is this the picture that you would paint for mothers at that moment and expectant fathers? Is that what they should be envisioning?
Tom, well, I've had the good privilege of knowing Carrie over the years and her fiancé, Suge, and they are remarkable speakers and motivational advocates for all people out there. And I think my comment to that would be, like the rest of us, people with Down syndrome have a range of talents. Some will go on to get married if that's right for them, but some will also lead fulfilling lives in other aspects of their lives. They may be clarinetists, they may be hockey players, they may be local musicians or singers in their local choir. And what people with Down syndrome have told us is, while they may not be able to achieve some of the things, Tom, that you and I are able to, they are nonetheless happy with their lives, and they are contributing important ways to their local communities.
Mm. Beth Allard, you and I were talking earlier. My own brother had Down syndrome. This is many years ago now, much before the time we live in now with the attitudes that and potential that's out there now. He died in his first year, but I well remember the trauma that came with that, just the adjustment, the mental adjustment for the family. It was so much to take on board. You've been through this. Are there people and families that you'd say to go through with it is right for you and not right for you? I mean, is going through with the pregnancy the right decision for everyone?
I think it's totally up to every person. Everybody has their own thoughts on the situation, and often, again, I go back to Brian's research, just having the information. I mean, we made a decision based on not having any information, and the doctors were talking as if it was 50 years ago when a lot of these children were institutionalized. Mm-hmm. And so we were so shocked because we had no information. I think that if people have information and have folks that they can talk to, even if they wanted to call me and meet my son Ben or whatever, mm-hmm. just to kind of see what life is like with a child with Down syndrome. And I'm not saying like with any child, there are challenges that you have.
It's not always easy. We all know that.
Yeah, and there are a lot of the children that might have health issues, but that could be the same with a typically developing child. So you do worry. But I think that it's whatever a person decides to do that's best for them and for their life and for their family. I would not judge them in any way. They would need to make that decision.
We're going to hear in a moment from a doctor who has advised couples on just this decision. But a lot of callers want to join us, and I want to begin to turn to them, if I may. Judy is calling from Acton, Massachusetts. Hi, Judy. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Well, what do you know, Judy?
I have faced this decision mm-hmm. and chose to terminate the pregnancy. It was about 15 years ago, mm-hmm. and my very first pregnancy, and had amnio because I was going to be 35 within a week or two of my due date.
Do you remember how the information came to you, how it was presented?
Well, I kind of figured it out because I was supposed to get my results back by a certain date. And they kept delaying. And mm-hmm. I started to suspect something was wrong. Mm-hmm. And then the day I was told that I would be able to have the results was actually New Year's Eve. And I called, and they said, oh, the doctor isn't in. He'll have to talk to you. So I knew something mm-hmm. was wrong. Mm-hmm. And the doctor talked to me the next day. And he was wonderful. He was very compassionate. He gave me tons of information. He talked to me several times that day.
Did he recommend a path to you or leave it entirely up to you?
Left it entirely up to me. He had a genetic counselor call me. He gave me lots of information about my specific case in which there are variations of the trisomy or the extra, I forget the word, in the particular chromosome.
The extra chromosome, right.
Yeah, and in my case, it was throughout all the cells that were tested. In other cases that are more mm-hmm. mild, called mosaic, mm-hmm. it's more sporadic.
Judy, let me ask you, how did you finally come to your decision to terminate the pregnancy? And these 15 years later, do you remain satisfied with that decision?
You know, I'd make the same choice. But it was a painful choice. It was my husband and I just sitting down and talking and discussing and recognizing we had a choice. And the likelihood of there being profound complications in terms of medical issues throughout this child's life was very, very high. And, you know, I'm so happy for these people that you have on the show that it worked out so well for mm-hmm. them. But I think there is a wide, wide spectrum, and that's not coming across in the discussion. And
a wide spectrum of functionality. Certainly not everyone like Carrie Bergeron, as lucky as her.
Exactly. And I think the thing that concerns me is I don't want there to be judgment about any choice that anybody makes. And, you know, I would make the same choice. It was painful as anything. I felt I had two awful choices. And which one do I choose?
Judy, are you afraid of this being pulled into the abortion debate?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, as the discussion, as abortion question becomes more complicated now with Supreme Court nominations, I get more and more concerned on a personal level of other women being in the situation I was in and not having a choice.
Judy, we appreciate your sharing your story. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I want to turn to Los Angeles now and Dr. John Williams. He's director of the maternal fetal medicine at Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles. He's been doing advising parents in this women in pregnancy and expectant fathers for nearly 25 years. Dr. Williams, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
You know, Brian Scottco has looked at how people get the news. How do you break the news?
I think one of the first things I want to make a point is that there's a lot of variation in the way in which patients undergo prenatal diagnosis. Some women are referred to a specific prenatal diagnostic center, which may be part of a tertiary medical center, such as Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles or many of the university medical centers. And then many women receive their prenatal diagnosis through their own obstetrician. And in the setting where they have the diagnosis through their own obstetrician, they may not be counseled by or informed by anyone who has the experience and the ability to be empathetic and impartial in presenting that information.
Brian Scottco has found that his research, as he interprets it, says people, when this information comes, are being given an inordinately negative picture of what lies ahead, and that may lie in part behind the 80% plus, roughly, terminations of these pregnancies. What do you think of that, the picture painted in that, Dr. Wayne?
I believe that's probably true in general because of the perception that the majority of individuals with Down syndrome will be profoundly mentally disabled, and of course that is not true. There is, as someone mentioned earlier on the call, a spectrum, and with most of the Down syndrome individuals falling into a range of what we call moderate mental retardation, and some, such as Carrie, are very, very high functioning, and there are a few on the other end of the spectrum that have very low IQs and are very poor functioning. We do believe at our center that patients should be counseled in a non-directive manner, and all patients through our program, and not to dwell too much on the state of California, mm-hmm. but we're a little bit unique in California that we have a state-run program through the Department of Health Services that does actually monitor most of the prenatal diagnostic centers. And so it is a requirement that patients all have face-to-face genetic counseling prior to the procedure.
What's your experience of how the couple tends to make this decision? Are you able to advise them on the likely severity of the disability that the child would face, or are they simply, is it not that nuanced? How do they, in your experience, how do people come to their decision to terminate or go ahead?
Well, I think many of the patients, due to information they've gotten through their own referring physician, through general, sort of knowledge in the community, come with a perception that Down syndrome is a very severe problem. And I think one of the reasons that and it's actually probably much higher than 80% of the women who have a diagnosis of Down syndrome who terminate, but they have already come to that decision largely before they have the procedure. There are many patients, who are undecided, and of course, there are many patients who don't even accept prenatal diagnosis. And in fact, only between 2/3 and 3/4 of patients who are at risk and who are offered prenatal diagnosis actually accept it. But so many of those women have already made up their minds. But for those that are uncertain, we try to paint a balanced picture.
As balanced as you can.
Yes, exactly.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Brian Scottco, what's your confidence in the how common that balanced picture, as Dr. Williams describes it, is in being portrayed?
Well, I'm thrilled that Dr. Williams and his center really sound like they're offering a balanced picture that mothers have come to ask for. But, the mothers that I heard from around the country, unfortunately, are not having that same experiences at their local hospitals. So there is work to be done, and there is improvement that can be made. In my study alone, 27% of the mothers only found out in person. The others did not find out in person, and 71% found out without their husband or partner present. So these are just basic recommendations that they're asking for that are not being met.
John Williams, Brian Scott Coe, Beth Allard with me here in the studio. Please stand by. There's a lot more we want to hear and take many more of your calls. We're talking about the Down syndrome diagnosis, the prenatal advice of doctors, the prenatal decisions of couples, and the growing political and technical complexity of all prenatal decisions. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Is there a right and wrong here? Is it changing? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital, for more than 60 years helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at babsoncapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Down syndrome diagnosis, the prenatal advice of doctors, the prenatal decisions of couples. You can join us. Is there a right and wrong decision here? Is this becoming the abortion debate in another form? Should it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Joined from Los Angeles in this hour by Dr. John Williams, Director of Maternal Fetal Medicine at Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles. He's been giving advice to couples faced with this decision for many years. Brian Scott Coe is with us. He is a Harvard Medical School student who came out with a study earlier this year describing how couples are informed once the prenatal tests show Down syndrome, and how the way they're informed affects their decision of whether or not to go through with the pregnancy. Beth Allard is with us as well. She made her own decision in 1998. Her son, Ben, has Down syndrome. He's now six, and you've heard her describe what he means in the life of her family and beyond. Beth, I'd just like to get your response to what we've heard so far in this conversation.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear that that everything is so advanced out in California. It's really nice to hear, and I wish that I had had a great experience like that. And I wanted to make a point to Judy's situation. And
Judy, our caller earlier.
Caller, mm-hmm. Yes, to say that I can totally appreciate how hard it was for Judy, because when we did find out about Benjamin, I have to say that I did consider terminating the pregnancy because I was so overwhelmed and so frightened. And I not in any way, shape, or form would ever judge anyone like Judy for making the decision that was best for her family. And I kind of wanted to preface that my comments by saying that, because it is such a difficult thing. I'm glad to hear that at least Judy's doctor was very compassionate and caring and gave her the information in the way that it should be given.
We hear you reaching out to Judy and saying you understand.
Absolutely.
Her decision.
Absolutely.
You know the fear.
It's heart-wrenching.
Recreate that, the fear. What was it that was so over? I mean, we can all picture it, but you've been there. The fear that what? This is going to take over our lives, that I won't know how to deal with this child, that what?
Well, I think when the doctor told us, you know, we said, well, what is Down syndrome? And they said, well, you're not going to know the levels of functionality for this child. You could have a child that's just doing nothing and have medical problems and hanging off of you and drooling, mm-hmm. and not communicating and not talking. And by hearing that information, you think to yourself, well gee, I mean, you know, are we going to have a life that's going to be, as Judy had said, filled with, you know, problems constantly, mm-hmm. medical and everything. So I think, and going back to Brian's research, by having a doctor that may have been like Judy's doctor and mm-hmm. said, this is the situation, mm-hmm. and you make the decision, whatever's best for you, mm-hmm. it just would have made it so much easier, because it's so, so very frightening, so scary.
And in your case, in many cases, in a first pregnancy, no
right.
less, when the whole thing is kind of a mystery. Anne is calling from Needham, Massachusetts. Hi, Anne, you're on the air.
Hi. I received the diagnosis 12 years ago, and it was probably the best decision that we ever made. Yes, it was frightening. Yes, it was scary.
And you went through with your pregnancy, Anne?
Yes, I did.
So you now have a 12-year-old.
I have a 12-year-old that is the light of our life, and he's the frosting on our cake, to be honest with you.
It's a son. What's his name?
His name is Adam. And we found out by chance. We went in for a routine ultrasound, and they had found a hole in Adam's heart. Mm-hmm. And they said, yes, it is pretty common with children with Down syndrome, but they couldn't really confirm it. And to make a long story short, yes, we went through an amniocentesis afterwards, and they said it would take 7 to 10 days. Well, it came back in 5. It was like, bingo, bingo, mm-hmm. yes, you do have a child with Down syndrome. And fortunately for us, ROB talked to us and wanted us to make an informed decision. And so he didn't know how to do that, but he did have another patient with a child with Down syndrome and called her. And that, I think, was our saving grace, because he really didn't know what to say to us. But he called Children's Hospital. Fortunately, we live in Boston, mm-hmm. and we got a hold of Dr. Alan Crocker, the guru here of New England and probably the United States on Down syndrome.
And the mentor to Brian Scottco,
our guest
today.
Yes, Brian, hello. We've met a few times. Mm.
And may I ask you, how has having Adam as a Down syndrome child, how has it shaped your family's life, your life?
Well, to be honest with you, it has been the best thing in life.
Because?
Alan Crocker had told us, well, he told my husband, if you can't accept differences, this isn't the life for you. And we are different. We're in a mixed marriage, and this has been a change. It has opened doors for us that would never have been open. It has given us compassion that we never knew we really had. And we've seen light through his eyes. And seeing Adam, we have a typical son who's 16, and having Adam is like having a flower from the National Geographic. We see the seed, we see each stem, and with our oldest child, we've just noticed the flower, but with Adam, we've noticed every little step, and it's been a wonderful thing. And he never gives up. How can I give up? If he doesn't, he has more perseverance. He's going to be the mayor one day. He knows everybody. Everybody knows him. And he has enlightened us, and he has opened doors that would never have been open, and he's given us courage that we never knew we had.
Lucky and good for you, Anne, and you describe it beautifully, and we thank you for your call. We know there's a range of experience out there. We know there's a range of attitudes. Lily is calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Lily, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I got the diagnosis of Down syndrome just over 3 months ago, and we actually made the decision to terminate.
How far into the pregnancy were you, Lily?
I was 22 weeks, so it was quite far along, and it was a level 2 ultrasound, which came back not conclusive, but there were some risk factors there.
How was the news broken to you, Lily, may I ask?
Very slowly, because the tests were not conclusive, and so we went from our doctor, well, we went from the ultrasound to the doctor and then back to a genetics counselor all in the same day, because, I'm sorry, when I got the diagnosis, I was probably 20 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and so then we knew that we only had a few weeks left to make the decision of whether or not to terminate.
I know, and this is a very fresh decision for you, and we can only imagine how difficult, but what was your thought process? I mean, you're hearing these stories this morning, a kind of range of stories here, and a lot of embrace of going forward. You went the other way. Most people do. What was your thought process, Lily?
It was incredibly, incredibly difficult, and actually the people that gave me the best support were women that I know who have special needs kids, and they all pretty much said the same thing. You know, if I had a choice, this would have been different. You know, you have a choice. Do what you need to with that choice. But they themselves, none of the women I talked to had Down syndrome children.
Did you feel pressured or pushed in one direction or another by the medical professionals that you dealt with? Lily?
No, but I think that they were surprised that I didn't already have a decision in my mind, that I was really open to going one way or the other. And what they did is they basically pointed me towards the Internet. And I have a little bit of a medical background, so I know enough, you know, what questions to ask. And I spent a lot of time on, I can't remember the name of the website, but there's a website for Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Spent a lot of time there and looking at kids who look, you know, very, very much are giving the positive side of it. So I think it was not necessarily because of the care that was offered to me, but because I really sought it out.
Beth Allard with me in the studio. What do you say to Lily? She's just made a very tough decision. She went the other way. Many people do. You're listening with a look of great compassion.
I don't know. I can totally understand and appreciate what she's gone through. I'm, you know, it's very, very difficult decision to make, and I, you know, as I had mentioned, you have to do what's best for you and for your family. And
we hear that, Lily. How do you think you're going to hold this decision in your mind and your heart in the years ahead? How's it sitting with you?
I think I'm very comfortable with the decision that I made, and I can say that in part because I'm listening to the show and I really appreciate the show. I think anything at all to get more information into patients' hands is just a really good way to go. But I think that I had a very, very intense period, a lot of sadness, a lot of tears. But I really do honestly feel comfortable with the decision, and I'm glad that I had the choice.
Lily, we thank you very much for sharing your story, and thank you for joining us this hour. Brian Scottko, let me ask you, our earlier caller mentioned your academic mentor, Alan Crocker, 79 years old, doctor, director of the Down Syndrome Clinic at Children's Hospital in Boston. We've heard this morning in this hour about legislation to get patients' information, the kind of thing you're encouraging. Dr. Crocker's quoted here is in the Wall Street Journal again, saying that that seems like neutral ground, but it is not, saying that he worries that political pressure could encourage efforts to identify physicians who discuss termination and those who don't. Dr. Crocker saying it's crucial that conversations between doctors and expectant parents remain private. The stakes are huge. He's quoted as saying he's a little uneasy about the very movement that your research seems to be propelling. What do you think of that, Brian?
Well, Dr. Crocker has been wonderfully supportive to me and many mothers in Massachusetts, and I think he underscores the sensitivities that revolve around this research and any sort of legislation that goes forward. But I think Dr. Crocker would agree that mothers, in being given accurate and up-to-date information, also need to also have one of those fundamental principles of medicine, and that is patient-doctor confidentiality. It needs to be discussed in the confines of the office so that mothers and fathers feel free to ask open questions and make their personal decisions. Now, in terms of legislation, it is interesting in that both the Republicans and the Democrats find something interesting in this, and they are coming together in almost an unprecedented move to really join hands in bipartisan support to giving that information. And again, the take-home message is give the accurate, up-to-date information, offer support groups if needed so that mothers can make their own informed decisions.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And, of course, we're referring there to the Prenatally Diagnosed Condition Awareness Act. This is the one Dr. Williams, supported by Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas and Edward Kennedy, Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts. You've got something along those lines in California already, as you describe. You know, the fear described in some quarters, Senator Brownback, is very anti-abortion. Dr. Williams is that, as I quoted Dr. Alan Crocker saying here, he's worried that doctors may end up, in the midst of the abortion debate, being prohibited from discussing the full range of option with parents. Do you share that concern?
I'm very concerned about that because we've been talking about Down syndrome, but there are many, many other abnormalities, both chromosomal abnormalities, inborn errors of metabolism, and molecular genetic disorders that are far more serious than Down syndrome. And so we really need to be sure that all of the patient's options are available. And very clearly, as we've been discussing, not all patients would opt to terminate a pregnancy, and certainly we are not, by doing prenatal diagnosis, in the business of providing a search and destroy mission to abort pregnancies. What we are doing is we're offering families options and giving them information so that they can make an informed decision.
Dr. Williams, look ahead at this picture with us for a moment. There's so much more prenatal screening and diagnosis going on, and we're told that is only going to get more and more sophisticated to the point that expectant parents would know an awful lot, practically everything at some point, physically and mentally to a degree, about a fetus. Where do you think that's leading us? Are we going to have another battle over, you know, when we know more and more, are more parents going to decide to terminate because of this or that? What does that leave you thinking as a doctor about the range of decisions people are going to face, the volume of decisions expected parents will face?
That's a good question, Tom. I really find that that we have a need for more and more educated physicians in order to be able to to adequately counsel these patients, and I think that that very clearly. I apologize. I lost the train of thought. What was the question again?
Well, just the range of things that people are going to learn about a fetus before they're born, and how we respond to that, individuals and as a society.
Right. Well, again, I think what we're all thinking about is the concept of eugenics, and very clearly the ethics have to come into play, and that if a condition is very serious and associated with a high likelihood of a poor quality of life, then it certainly would be acceptable to consider prenatal diagnosis, and if the couple opt to interrupt the pregnancy, to proceed in that manner. Whereas, if you wanted a child with blue eyes and the child had brown eyes and you decided you wanted to terminate the pregnancy, that very clearly would be unethical.
Brian Scutko, how do you see the future unfolding here? You know Down syndrome very well from your own sister, Kristen, and beyond. You know that 80% plus of those pregnancies remain terminated. Where do you see that headed, and what about this broader picture of screening?
Well, I think more and more as screening's becoming more advanced and more accurate, it's challenging everyone in our communities to ask a deep personal question. When does life begin in my mind, and what are my opinions on what is an important and valuable person in our society? And that is a personal deep question that I think people, if they haven't asked it to themselves already, are going to find that they're going to increasingly need to consider it and given some thought, given the way that the science is going.
Beth Allard, the last word goes to you. You're the mother of Benjamin. Benjamin's Down syndrome, and also we've heard the light he's been in your life, and yet you're very determinedly non-judgmental on this front. Just tell us more about Ben and what you expect for him.
Well, I think that Ben is actually going to compete with Adam for mayor.
Social boy.
He is determined. He never gives up, similar to what Adam's mother had said. Mm-hmm. He's just unbelievable. Every single day we see new things with him, and he's had challenges, but he never, ever gives up.
And a lifespan that used to be seen as in the 20s, now moving into the 50s.
Absolutely. So we see great things for him.
Beth Allard, we're very grateful to you for sharing such intimacies with us.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Beth Allard, her son Ben has Down syndrome. There's been another child since then. His
name? Yes, Max.
Max.
He's two.
good for Max, 2 years old as well. Thank you so much for being with us. And to Dr. John Williams at Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles, we're very grateful for your time and insights, doctor.
You're welcome.
And Brian Scutko at Harvard Medical School, good luck with the rest of your studies. We'll be looking for your work in the future, no doubt. Thank you very much for joining us from New York this hour.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.